My name's Ellen, and I am a pothead or recovering pothead, and I have 1,451 days, or 3 years, 11 months, and 21 days. So that means I'll have 4 years on April 9th. But I've been around a little bit longer than that, and so I've always been told, you know, to pray before I tell my story or ask my higher power for guidance. And I'm going to tell you how it was, what happened, and how it is today. And I'm going to really try to keep it off my my podologue or whatever you call it. I actually started smoking cigarettes at 9 years old. I grew up in New York City. Both of my parents were fairly sick. My mom was bipolar and my father was a gambler, which is very similar to any of the addictive diseases that we have. And by the time I was 13, I tried to kill myself. I took a bottle of Stelazine, and fortunately, I didn't die. But what that left me with was the anxiety and the fear that I had, that my life was disgusting. It was just really very difficult to manage. So first I had a couple of drinks. Actually, I had more than a couple of drinks. I drank a bottle of whiskey from my father's dry bar. And I immediately got sick and blacked out. And I woke up the next day and I said, well, that's not going to work for me. So I decided I was going to find some pot. And this was back in 1972. Again, living in New York City. Everybody told me, oh, you probably won't get high the first time. You know, the pot wasn't as good as it is today. But I did get high the first time. And for the first time in my life at that point, the anxiety went away. And I do have to preface this, alcohol is part of my story, but my main addiction is marijuana. Because on marijuana, I was able to function and control my feelings. And, you know, one of the things that it says in your questions, in the questions, the 12 questions, is are you unable to deal with your emotions? Well, I couldn't even feel my emotions. I was so numb all the time. So I smoked pot day in and day out. I couldn't get enough of it from the moment I started. I used to dream of swimming pools of marijuana and made a lot of bad decisions along the way. And I couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. I was like a squirrel in a cage that couldn't get out. And fast forward to my first time in recovery, I had just turned 30. I was living in Atlanta. Now, this is after leaving New York City. I went to Colorado. From Colorado, I went to Montana. Montana, I went back to Colorado. Colorado, I moved to Michigan. And then I wound up in Georgia. I said it was for my work, but it was really because I was always thinking the grass was greener on the other side, literally, not the marijuana the grass. But I could not stop using. I used daily, nightly, and that was just my routine. So I hit bottom. Well, I guess I should back up. When I moved to Montana, I was 3 months pregnant, and I moved in with this guy that I really didn't know. I was drunk when I got pregnant, and I was pretty miserable. And when I was pregnant, like, I knew that I can't smoke cigarettes, I can't drink, I can't smoke pot, and I became a miserable dry drunk. You know, for the next 3 years, I was very depressed. The only thing that made me happy was this baby. But I wound up back in Colorado and then Michigan and then Georgia and Atlanta. And I was also a very workaholic. So I was working in this high-pressured retail commission-based job, and my drinking, my pot smoking, and other recreational drugs just got in the way of my being a parent, because I was a single parent at that time. And in 1987, I decided I can't be this parent, and the man that I really didn't get along with would be a better parent than I would. So I sent my son to Colorado for his father to raise him. Well, a year later is when I hit bottom in 1988. And I had the Yellow Pages. That's when we had phone books. And I called a psychiatrist in there, just a random psychiatrist. And I called him and I said, I need help. And he said to me, well, do you have money or insurance? And I said, no. And he said, well, call the county that you live in. So I called them and I made an appointment. And I was all dressed up in a suit. So I was always looking for work. And I said, gave him my story. I said, I can't stop. I smoke pot all the time. And I drink a lot at night. And I need medication, because I thought that I was bipolar like my mother. So I said, just give me some lithium and I'll be fine. And they patted me on my head and they said, we'd like to, but we'd like to see you clean and sober for at least 30 days. And I said, what does that have to do with anything? I couldn't imagine my life without getting high. I just, you know, if I couldn't have if I just had pot, I would just be okay. But it didn't work for me anymore. So they gave me information and pamphlets on NA, because that's what we had at the time. I could not find the meeting, so I went to the police station to ask them where the meeting was. And I walked into that meeting, it was sometime in February of 1988, and it was the first time I had seen the steps of recovery. And I'm like, I was crying the whole meeting. I mean, I felt like everybody was staring at me. And I was like, oh, my God, there are the instructions I've been looking for in my life. And they told me one day at a time, and I could, because I could not imagine myself living without marijuana. I was just like, there's just no way I'll be able to do it. But they told me one hour at a time, 1 minute at a time. And I listened to them. And I fellowshipped with them. I didn't know that's what I was doing, but they dragged me to the Waffle House after the meeting for coffee. They dragged me to restaurants. They dragged me to Panama City for a Fun in the Sun convention. And I found a sponsor. I got very involved. It was a miracle. I did wind up going to treatment at 3 years for my workaholism. And when I came out of the treatment center, it was the first time that I ever felt self-love for myself. I had always thought that if I told you who I was, I would fall apart in a million pieces and no one would be able to get me back together again. So what happened was, you know, they told me all the regular things. Don't get into a relationship for a year. Don't make any major decisions for a year. And I listened to everything, because I had never listened to anyone in my entire life. My parents, my family, whatever they suggested, I did the opposite. But I listened to you addicts. And I said, okay, fine. And I wound up moving back to Colorado when I had a stable foundation. I was about 6 years sober. And I found meetings. I was living up in the mountains. I got my son back in my life. I made a few amends to him, amends to his father. And, you know, I never really had anything, because I also grew up in extreme poverty. I never had anything as a child. And when I was using, I couldn't keep anything. Everything just fled from my hands. Well, once I got to Colorado, I got a really good job. I sold cars. I had a little house. I had my spouse, and life was good. And then I stopped going to meetings. at year 8. And by the year 10 rolled around, the first thing I did was we were having a really great day. We did the hot tubs. We had family from out of town here. We went to this beautiful restaurant. And my sister-in-law, who had this beautiful glass of Burgundy, I was just like, I could do one glass of wine. I'm a pothead. And I picked up that glass of wine, and I knew I was fucking up. That was in April. Come October, I came across some pot. I actually stole it from some friends that I was staying with. And I rolled a joint, and I smoked it, and the most profound feeling came over me. Like, I felt like I was tethered to a higher power. I was felt like I was tethered to a universe. And somebody cut the Band-Aid, and I went, like, down to hell. And the Band-Aid just left me. And the obsession and the compulsion was so much greater than I ever remembered. It was like if I had never stopped. And all I could think about was getting more. This was before pot was legalized in Colorado. So, you know, I had to get it where I could get it. And I hid it from my spouse. And I had the cleanest teeth because I was always brushing my teeth. But I was just pretty miserable. You know, I started changing jobs again. I was doing risky behavior. And I didn't know what to do. I mean, I was just stuck like that. And that lasted for 5 years. And in that time, my son had graduated high school, and we decided to move to Sarasota, Florida. We wanted to be by the beach. Real estate was cheap back then. Back in 2000. So we sold our house in the mountains and we bought a house in Florida, and I was still using. And I was miserable because I was lying to everybody. And that same cycle with work, I could not get past that squirrel. I was just consumed with when I was going to get my next high, when I was going to get a next hit all day long. And in 2002, it was Christmas week. The company I was working for, they were going under pretty quick. And so they didn't have any money for our bonuses. But they decided to give us a week off. So I had my pot. I said, okay, I'm just going to smoke this pot up. And then I'm going to quit when it's done. And come Friday of that week, I called the NA hotline. This was in 2002, and I got a couple of meetings, one for that night and one for the next morning, and I said, I'm going to go to the one in the morning. So I put my phone down, and my phone rang again. It was the emergency room in Colorado, and my mother was in intensive care. So the next day, I went to I went from Florida to Colorado to see my mom, and I made the decision that weekend to put hospice in place because she was just so sick. And, of course, I found people that I stayed with that had access to marijuana, and I'm like, well, I'm not quitting now. I can't. There's no way I could handle all this. And for some reason, I was able to be with my mom and love her, but I was still getting high. So I don't know how genuine the love was. I guess it was to the best of my ability. My mother died on January 15, 2003. I went back to Florida, and my partner said, I don't want to hear that you're sorry. I want to hear what you're going to do, and I want to see what you're going to do. And I kept going to meetings, and I was getting high when I was going to meetings. And I finally asked somebody for help, and they got me into a, like, a 48-hour dry-out crisis center. And from that, I left that meeting, and I went, I left the crisis center, and I went directly to a meeting. And I immersed myself in NA again. I wound up staying clean and for the next 14 years, from 2003 to 2017. And in between that time, I was able to do the steps. I had a sponsor. I'm still good friends with her. And then I had sponsees that I worked the steps with, and that was a really great gift. I had friends that I never thought I would have. My life was really good again. I had a couple of dogs. I mean, I just had a really, really good life. And in 2017, the beginning of the year, I had my third back surgery, and I could not get out of pain. And somebody very close to me, I also became a grandmother for the first time in 2017. Somebody very close to me brought home smokable CBD, like a vape cartridge. And the next day, I knew in the back of my head, I knew in my heart, I knew, don't do it, Ellen, don't do it. You know, I've been smoking and inhaling since I was 9 years old. I mean, I was just like, pure addict. And I picked it up, and I did it. And from that moment on, I was consumed with getting more and more. And for the most part, I just vaped THC. And I did that for the next 3 years. I remember when I first got clean, I'm thinking, why am I crying so much? I used to smile all the time while I was high. So, of course I was crying. I was grieving, missing marijuana. I was a pothead. That was my only friend. But this time, my second relapse, I was full of rage. I had never been as rageful as I was. It was horrible. And I don't want to talk about why I was rageful, but I was rageful. I was living in Florida. I didn't feel safe there anymore. I remember writing a letter to my senator, and a good friend of mine from AA who had mega years, we bumped into each other. And as soon as I saw her, I started crying and I told her what I had been doing. And she took me to a meeting that night, but I told her I wasn't ready. So I think this was in February of March of 2020. So I continued to get high, and I didn't want to get clean. I didn't want to stop using. I was just obsessed and compulsed, and I just did not want to stop. So I had to get a new shoulder, and COVID was just starting. And I was really in a lot of pain, and I thought, I can't do this again. And I went to another friend's house, and they did a meditation for me. And then I went to the woman that bumped into me at my senator's, this woman. I don't want to say names, but I went to her house, and I said, I need help. And she said, what can I do for you? I said, I need accountability. I need to call all of my people in my recovery circle and let them know what I've been doing. And they all rallied around me, and they took care of me. And lockdown happened, and I started going to NA meetings online, and people were vaping online, like smoking cigarettes or vaping. I'm like, I cannot handle this. And then I found the Marijuana Anonymous Women's Meetings, and it was, I think, at 9 or 10 o'clock in California, and I was on the East Coast, so it was 12 o'clock for me. And let me tell you something. I was just as sick coming back than I was originally. I cried for a month. And a good friend of mine, I'm not sure if she's on this call or not, she told me that I didn't lose any of my time. and that just like the disease is progressive, recovery is also progressive. And I clung down to that. I stopped feeling sorry for myself. I got a sponsor that we worked the steps on Zoom. She lived in Oregon. I was in Sarasota. And it was incredible. The love that I had, the fellowship that I had there was also incredible on Zoom. And doing the steps on Zoom was fine. It was just a great experience. This is my first phone meeting. So I kind of feel weird. I'm sitting in my bedroom thinking, who am I talking to? I'm talking to my phone. I actually moved back to Colorado. I'm in Colorado now. We uprooted our lives 2 years ago. My son, who is not in recovery, also a pothead, has type 1 diabetes since he is 9 years old. And a year ago, he went on kidney dialysis. And we came out here to help him out. I was at an Al-Anon meeting this morning. I said, we came out here to rescue him and to enable him. And that's exactly what we did. But I take care of myself by going to Al-Anon today, too. I go to a lot of AA meetings in person because there's just not a lot of MA here, and I would think there would be many more meetings in this town, especially since pot is legal. I had a doctor say to me, have you ever tried THC or CBD? And I said, no, and I'm not going to because CBD leads to THC for me. I told him I was a pothead. And he said, well, you came to the wrong state. I said, well, there's liquor stores all over the place and alcoholics, you know, recovering alcoholics, stay away from the liquor. So I don't ever want to lose my sobriety. Actually, I don't ever want to come back in again. So I stay really close to the program. I have a couple of sponsors now, one in Al-Anon and one in AA, and I also sponsor women. And what I've heard in AA is that a lot of people are clean from marijuana too. You know, I think there was a time, and there may still be a time with certain people that they go to AA and they still smoke marijuana. I don't consider myself clean if I did that. I don't do anything right now. Maybe a little too much ice cream or coffee, but that's it. And I still have a good life. And the reason I have a good life, even though it's very complicated with my spouse and my son, and I don't get to see my grandchildren too much, maybe once a week, that's all complicated. But I live in the moment. I live in the day today. And I don't live in fear because I trust my higher power, my connection to the universe, that I am safe today. I try not to worry about yesterday or future trip because that's what gets me in trouble. Just for today, I'm okay, and I don't have to get high today. And I just have to do the next right thing and not create any new wreckage. And that's my biggest thing. You know, anything past my nose is none of my business, and I try to live by that. When I get into other people's business, all it does is cause friction and fights. And, you know, my thinking got me to where I'm at. And I consider myself, even though I almost have 4 years, I consider myself still sick. I'm still an alcoholic and an addict, a pothead. But I don't beat myself up over that anymore. And I have to take care of myself. I can't take care of anybody else. I can love them. I could cook for them. But I cannot fix them. And that acceptance is a really peaceful place for me to be. With that, I think I'm up to my story. And I really appreciate Antonio for inviting me to tell my story on this phone call. And I hope You got something out of my story that might help you. And I wish everybody a good weekend. Thank you.